Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Oh, yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, Big Mouth Dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, Big Mouth Copycat from the internet.
What's going on, Dylan?
Nothing.
I'm eating chocolate and I'm drinking that that weird fresh up Feijoa fizz stuff, which is in the weird odd generic can, so I don't have any idea what's actually in it, but I'm getting the feeling that there is a lot of sugar in it. So this is a sugar-fueled rather than ethanol-fueled discourse for me. Don't know if that's going to be better or worse. Also,
a
lot of
water because I'm so maybe that'll pep me up a wee bit.
Pep you up? You get pepped up.
Pep.
Possibly less than Ben. Possibly less than Ben. And, I mean, he barely even can breathe.
I'll try and find some pep.
So I've realised a lot of things about myself this week. Would you mind if I just break character for a moment and talk about myself for a change?
Sure. It's a bit off script, but okay.
I know. I realised that there's a thing that I like, and I've liked it for years. But I've realised it's one of the many ways in which I'm lowbrow, and that is the kind of bread that I like. I like super thick white toasted bread. You know, the tip-top stuff. Not just thick sliced, but super thick sliced. From my childhood, growing up in Ponsonby in the 70s and 80s, when it was a much more interesting suburb than it is now, I associate it with kind of Pacific families, those super thick slices of white bread.
Do you know why you like that sort of bread?
Because it's delicious?
No, it's because you need to slather on a lot more peanut butter to make a sandwich with that bread.
Except I don't make sandwiches. What I do is I make peanut butter toast. And here's a very important thing. Now, Bob Jones has his own way of making toast. He stands two slices together like a little A-frame and lets them dry out. Because you know when you first pull toast out of the toaster, it's steamy?
If you lay it down straight away, it gets soft on the bottom.
Exactly. Well, he doesn't do that. But what I do is I butter it and peanut butter it as quickly as possible so that it's got that optimal melt, that kind of gloss as
and
the
that,
oil
that,
comes out of
the top of
butter.
The bread kind of breaks up a little bit. But how do you know how Bob Jones makes his toast?
I read about it in an article somewhere.
Excellent.
Yeah. Anyway, so what's going on? I think I can hear a thing. Should I push a button?
You go on.
Where is the button?
We've got a guest on Discourse.
There you go. I'd like to welcome David Farrer, who is what right wing political wonk I'm going to call you.
Is that the guy, the guy from TV3 who just came out as a gay man?
Yeah, no, that was what I thought. That was what I thought we were doing.
Classic.
I made that mistake again where I tweet the wrong person. Hello, David. You're not out as a gay man yet?
No, not yet. After my namesake David Farrer came out, I did have many people congratulate me on coming out, and they look very disappointed when I told them I'm not out, and then they go, "So you're in the closet?"
Yeah,
and I'm like, "There is no closet. Sorry."
I was wondering why you took the position you did on the fag marriage thing, David, and now it's all come clear to me. You should stick to your roots and get back over to Labour. You're obviously one of these pinko commies. You've shamed the whole National Party, David. You've shamed us all.
Well, yeah, a few of the commenters on the blogs are like that, but what I thought was
that... No, you say the blogs, you mean your blog.
Is Waiawaiawa a bit too, and there's a few of the Conservative ones, but you actually had 30 National MPs vote for it, 29 against. And,
I was extremely
shame.
Impressed by that. Yeah, I was really impressed. When you published the list of who voted which way, I thought it was incredible. Now, it's going to be interesting to see who votes for the actual, you know, if it comes up to become, you know, actual, you know, legislation, an actual act. I want to see who continues to vote. I mean, will it still be 80-40? Will it still have that really, you know, that really promising kind of affirming ratio? Because I understand that approximately represents the general population's take on the issue as well. So
yeah, the general pop's around 2-1 in favour. Parliament voted 2-1 in favour. I think there will be at most 5 or 6 who could change their vote.
Yeah.
And that could be either way. There could be some who voted no on first reading, who if they amend the proposed law to make it very clear no church can be forced to do a marriage they don't want to,
might
vote for a second and third reading. Likewise, there might be 1 or 2 who voted first reading who then find it's just too much for them and they'll vote against at the last one. But I don't think it will be great numbers swapping.
Yeah.
So I didn't get you on here to talk about the gay marriage, because just tending to talk about it makes me slightly infuriated. What I got you on to talk about was American politics, because they've just had the Republican and Democratic National Conventions, which is like their big meetings, which are televised nationally and apparently attract quite high ratings. It's all very strange, but part of the political circus that is the USA. And I wanted to know if you've been following it much.
Yeah, no, definitely have. In fact, the US Embassy kind of invited a few of us to view both the Romney speech and the Obama speech at the embassy on the final days of each convention. And, you know, there's tens of thousands of people there. It's a huge gala, really. I actually found the best speech of the conventions, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Absolutely incredible, not just the way he speaks, how he connects with people, but his written words were 2,900, delivered 5,700.
Wow, I mean, so he's off prompter that much.
Oh yeah, that poor teleprompter assistant must hate him because he just goes off on his own, but you know, you can't actually fake that sort of natural talent.
No, and knowledge as well. He knows what he's talking about, undeniably. The thing that was most prominent and, in fact, stood out most in the stuff that I've seen from both conventions about Clinton's speech was that it included numbers, details, and facts, which was something that was fairly sparse in many of the others and almost entirely lacking in any of the Republican speeches I saw.
And what's really interesting with Clinton's speech is that there were lots of statistics there. And now there's a site, and I think we were going to head into this, which I love checking out, called factcheck.org. And it's totally nonpartisan, and it critiques major speeches, advertisements, for whether they're total porkies or out of context. And yeah, both Obama and Romney's speeches got fairly heavily panned.
Yep.
Obama and Biden had 8 or 9 sort of exaggerations or falsehoods, and I think Romney had a fair few. His VP candidate had lots. Clinton, though, they said there were 1 or 2 maybe. They're pretty minor.
Yeah.
And when you consider that, yeah, this is the guy.
And that was really just stuff that's like an interpretation of how you choose to look at it.
Right. Yeah, and this is the guy who spoke off script for half of that, had more data than anyone else. Quite incredible performance by him.
So there's one part of the American political landscape, or the this year the presidential race that has really I guess put me off balance, and that is the willingness of, I'm going to say the Republicans, but it's true of both parties, but the Republicans have been most stark in this way, the willingness of them to lie and deliberately misrepresent their opponent's position. And the one that was most obvious was they devoted an entire day. The theme of the first day of their convention was "We Built It," and it's based upon a completely taken out of context part of an Obama speech where he is pointing out to small businesses that they didn't build, you know, the infrastructure that they rely upon to do business, and they've taken that to mean that if you're a small business owner, you didn't build your business. And so they've made a whole day around, yes, you did, you built your business, which no one's denying.
You know, when I was a small business owner, I didn't build my business. That's why I work for a university now.
Yes, well, you also didn't build any bridges or roads.
No, oh God, I wish. If I could go back and do things again, I'd be an architect or an engineer, I tell you what.
I don't think mischaracterizations like that do belong to only one side of the politics. The attacks on Romney have been absolutely ferocious also, and a lot of them have been panned for being quite inaccurate and misleading too. The style of politics over there is vastly different to in New Zealand. It is much more rough and tumble. It is much more attacked. Having said that, I don't think they do a lot. I think this election is going to be about economic fundamentals. People want jobs, people are worried about the economy, and it's going to be a referendum on who they think is going to be best for that. And in a way, that's why you're getting those attack ads, though, because Romney is trying to portray Obama as having failed on the economy. He doesn't understand business. Rather, they're trying to portray Romney, who does have a business background, that the sort of business he ran was one that took over firms, sacked all the employees, and sold them off for a profit.
That's true. That's exactly what Bain did.
But not for all. There's been some where they turned around firms and they've gone on and been great employers, etc. You know, there's long Wikipedia articles on the history of Bain Capital. So, yeah, both sides are trying to portray the other in the worst possible light, effectively.
Yeah. Do you think that kind of politics is going to come here?
I don't think to the same degree. I think we have a cultural reflex against it.
Kiwi.
You know, we do get certainly some pretty heavy attack politics at times, but in the US, they're used to it even within the same party.
Yeah, well, that's the weirdest thing. They've got that primary thing, and you've got, you know, all the Republican candidates, Newt Gingrich and whoever the hell else it was, there was about a million of them this time around, all attacking each other for being completely useless, and then one of them wins, and they all come and stand behind him and go, oh, this guy's great.
They say the most appalling things about each other. And look at New Zealand, where I highlighted this today. John Key was asked about the speakership in Tohunari, and all he actually said was something along the lines of, well, not so sure, it has to be someone who's acceptable to all parties in Parliament. And this got described as a brutal slapdown. You know, if that's a brutal slapdown in New Zealand terms, I don't think it would even count as a granny kiss in American politics.
No, that'd be way up there as a wonderful, wonderful respect for the
compliment.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's just the gist of it. I just find it particularly strange. I mean, I know you did a thing on your website the other day I saw, which was, you know, do this test and find out where you fit in American politics. I think you were a moderate Republican.
I was, but I love how they've classified me as a moderate, because there's two scales they look up: economic and social. On economic issues, I'm right on one extreme, to the right of the Tea Party. But on social issues, I'm on the other extreme, to the left of the most liberal Democrat. Right. So because you're at two extremes,
you get stuck in
that. They say it cancels out and you're a moderate in the middle.
And of course they have a two-party system, so you have to just kind of go with one. You can't get the representation that we hopefully can here.
No, we've got seven or eight parties to choose from. I mean, they do have the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, but they have no seats in Congress, probably never will have a seat in Congress, never be president or governor. So if you want to have influence, you get involved in one of the two big parties. And look, they're not parties as we think of them, where our parties are quite disciplined. They have a party leader. They have people all agree to vote by the same policies. Their parties are almost labels. And you see people defect from one to another. And when it gets to Congress, people vote very much as individuals. There's almost no party whipping. And that's part of the problem with US politics, is that then means rather than try and influence a party by a well-reasoned argument, you have to go and influence 600 individual congressmen, and then the corporate interest, the lobbying, the funding of the PACs comes in.
So it sounds like you don't actually think that America is the greatest democracy in the world.
Oh, look, there's parts of it which are wonderfully good.
The Electoral College.
The separation of powers, the term limit on the presidency was so foresighted. And I do like parts of the fact that they are so passionate. They have their primaries, they have these sort of year-and-a-half-long campaigns, which do really test you like nowhere else. So there is a lot of good there. But where they have their real weaknesses, I think, the almost corruption that comes with, if you want to get re-elected, you need money. And the lobbying game there is so different to New Zealand. In New Zealand, a lobbyist, you know, works through the system. They do rely on arguments. You don't have lobbyists here saying, you know, if you vote for this, we'll set up a super PAC, give it $2 million and help you in your primary battle against your opponent.
Here's hoping, eh?
15 minutes.
All right, well, we'll let you go. The US politics is just, it's frustrating to watch from afar, and then there's plenty of, I guess, intelligent commentators within the US who can see the insanity, but they have no hope of changing it.
Well, it's decentralized. There's so much about it which you can't even control centrally, for a lot of the power rests with the states.
Well, that's the thing. The US is so individualistic, isn't it? It's all about...
Well, it's how it was created, though. These states existed before the United States.
Even on a lower level, they have, you know, where you've got a town sheriff is elected, and you've got, you know, all that
stuff. Oh, dog catcher, the sewage board.
Judges, freakishly.
Really. And when they have an issue like we've had, say, gay marriage or same-sex marriage, here in New Zealand, it was primarily a legislative issue. There was a vote in Parliament where the public had some views on it, but you have one vote and it's 80 to 40 and it's almost over.
And they try and make them constitutional issues.
Over there...
It is a constitutional issue.
Different laws in every of the 50 states. You can have referendums on it. You can amend state constitutions. You've got propositions. You've got federal Defense of Marriage Act laws. So it becomes, those issues become far more all-encompassing because of the nature of their political system.
All right, I've got several questions for you, David, out of the chat room. Firstly, why the hell haven't I fixed the audio on the live stream?
Okay, why haven't?
Because you're a cheap and lazy person.
That's exactly right. I'm surprised you got there. That was going to be my answer as well. Number two, do you know anything about voter suppression in the States, the voter ID stuff and closing of hours and the days that you have to do your voting and stuff on?
Quite a lot. And this is one of the big battles where the Republicans worry that a lot of people who aren't qualified to vote do vote. And that's because in a lot of states, anyone who's got a criminal record in the last 10 years can't vote. Well, the Democrats worry that Republicans want to scare off legitimate voters too. Mm. The worst example I've seen of this, and it really was a bit of racial profiling, was in one of the states around 20 years ago where you can object if you're a pahi to any enrollment if you think they haven't got grounds to be enrolled. Mm. And the Republican Party in that state, I think it was actually a county, not a full state, objected to every enrollment of someone called Leroy or Jerome. It isn't the most subtle thing in the world.
Jeez. Oh, another question from the chat room. Do you think that Obama is overpriced on I Predict at 70 cents?
I predict, I have him at probably around 64, 65. Yeah. I think in trade, I'm surprised they're still quite low. That's the main US market. Mm. He's at 58, 59. Mm. For what I look at now is you've had the two conventions. I'd say the Democrats one went better for them. And I look, what's the game changer for Romney? Ooh. I don't see how he closes the gap. Yeah. Having said that, why Obama's not higher, though, it's not the popular vote, it's the Electoral College.
Yeah.
And a very smart guy who some won't like called Karl Rove has worked out that the way Romney can win, he just needs three states, Ohio, Florida, and a minnow.
Isn't it even more ridiculous than that, though, that it's not even that, it can be even down to just a few counties within those states?
Well, look at 2000, where... a couple of counties in Florida decided the election.
No, they didn't.
The Supreme Court did. And let's not forget that if they'd done a full recount, Al Gore would have won Florida.
Well, actually, no.
It was a full recount. It wasn't what he was asking for.
No, you're
doing
right.
Doing what he asked for, he would not have won. But a full recount, he would have won.
I agree. If they'd taken the most liberal interpretation of what you count, he had more votes in Florida. The irony is, what his team were asking for, even if they won at the Supreme Court, he would have lost, which is why I don't think the Supreme Court gave it to him. But yes, you are absolutely right in terms of if they were able to count every vote and give the benefit of the doubt to those wonderful hanging chads.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, the chads. I'm pleased we don't have to deal with anything like that here.
We all became such experts, didn't we, in 2000 on hanging chads and the like.
Give me a felt tip pen any day.
I've never heard that before.
Well, you were very young then, Dylan, just like you are now. You probably
don't. I don't think anyone had heard that. The hanging chad became a word in 2000. It was so fantastic.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions, Dylan?
I've got nothing else, really.
Because we've had David now for 20 minutes, which is twice as long as you said.
Yeah, well, he's...
You're stealing his whole life from him.
He's twice as verbose as I expected.
David, it has been great having you on.
Always enjoyable.
It's probably much better for us to talk about American politics than New Zealand politics because it's probably easier for us to agree.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a bit more interesting at the moment. So New Zealand politics, yeah. You know, we've had the two big votes on the drinking age and the marriage equality, and now it's sort of back to...
And you, of course, being an insane right-wing lunatic, were against our opinions on both of those things, I'm sure.
No.
No? Oh.
Apart from having been centrally involved in the marriage equality vote and lobbying national MPs for it and being behind the Keep It 18 campaign to keep the purchase age 18...
Yeah, apart from those things, basically.
Apart from those two.
Yeah, apart from those. No, I like what I like about New Zealand politics. Well, I don't know. It's probably true of lots of politics. I like that, for the most part, I think New Zealand politicians are at least fairly straight up and honest about...
Except Paula Bennett.
Well, hey, best speech of the marriage equality one, I know, you know you've probably already chatted about this, but was Paul Hutchison, this lovely old guy who's, you know, a doctor... And he wanted to vote against, basically.
But he couldn't come up with a reason.
I've listened to all the reasons, all the arguments, spiritual, moral, physical, medical, health, and I can't find any reason to vote against. In fact, the opposite is true.
Right.
And I just thought, wasn't that a wonderful... For we get cynical about politics and politicians, and to have a politician say... You know, I wasn't convinced, but I've listened to all the reasoning and the arguments, and it's now the right thing to do.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, it's the way it's meant to go, isn't it? You know, being well, able to compel someone absolutely. With the argument. Yeah.
Being able to have your mind changed, brilliant.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for joining us, David. Have a nice remaining cold evening in Wellington.
Will do.
Cheers.
See ya.
Bye.
Okay, so we've got a whole lot of news stories to get on with. Oh, listen to the call quality. Listen how wonderful it is. Probably that means that that Dylan's gone as well. That's probably what that means. Okay, Dylan, stop it. Dylan can't hear me right now. I was going to say nice things about, you know, this and that and the other thing. Nice things about Skype and how clean it had gone.
Funny thing, I don't know how
and
to use Skype.
And then it turned out, yep, completely gone. No, you don't, do you? No,
well,
you don't.
What happened is I pressed a little button that I thought would hang up on just David because it's right by his name. And I thought I'll just make sure that David goes. And then it hung up on the whole call. Ah, funny.
Yep.
Skype. Mm-hmm. Can't live with it. Can't. Anyway, moving on.
Can't find a decent alternative.
I've tried. I've looked very hard. There isn't. Maybe we'll try Google Hangout again sometime. But
oh, geez. Google Hangout. I don't know. Oh. It's not that. Well, actually, they've made a lot of changes since we tried it. So who knows? Who knows? Might be all right now. So there's a hell of a lot of news in my notes anyway.
So you all just, you pasted in there frantically at the last minute, so I haven't had a chance to review any of it. I can't, you know, pitch the softballs at you or anything. Sorry.
What's that about?
I don't know. You know.
So a long time ago, once upon a time.
Poorly considered and unexpected segment.
We had a thing about the fastest this and that, and we had like the fastest wheelchair and the fastest mobility scooter and the fastest lawnmower and all of those things. This week's the fastest, and I guess probably we should have a sting just about. Be more useful than the
best of life hacker,
because I can never find a best of life hacker. It's hard to go through that shit. I tell you what we need is the world's fastest this thing, and the world's fastest this thing this week is absolutely terrifying, because it is the world's fastest four-legged robot that runs. It runs faster than Usain Bolt, and its legs they look like blades. And it now, luckily, it has no brain, and all it can do is run on a treadmill. But that's just how they start.
Yeah, the next thing. We know where this goes. We've seen the movie.
Yeah. Terrifying. And, I mean, you compare this thing with, like, Big Dog, and if you made, which is, you know, more, you know, it has its own self-contained. Oh,
so it's being developed by the, you didn't mention that it's being developed by the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Therefore, for specifically for military applications. Yeah. So it'll have some sort of armament added to it, and then it will go rogue.
Yeah, exactly. Once it's got, you know, its own built-in power supply and they put away some of those cables, and then I don't know that it even needs guns. I think it will just run at you and put out its forelegs straight ahead and just go right through your body like you are an elephant made of tissue paper. I don't know why an elephant in particular would be an easier thing to get through just because it was made of tissue paper than any other shape. But, you know, it's a big thing that could, it would look really cinematic flying through.
Do you know, I'm looking at the video of this now and I'm thinking, you know what, I reckon the guys on Mythbusters could build a bit of one of these.
No, those guys are friggin' hacks. Those guys would just angle grind and duct tape it. Yep. They couldn't even make a rocket pack work, a rocket belt. They couldn't even make that work.
I do think perhaps they deliberately fail quite often.
I don't know if it's deliberate or not. I think they just can't.
Oh, it nearly fell over. Oh, goodness.
Oh, I should have pushed the...
And now the news.
Because that's news. Why not? So I've got dozens of stories, and I've read probably none of them.
Next story.
Should we go to one that I have read?
But this one is... It kind of runs on from what we were just speaking about at the end there with David about... And something we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks as well, which is... marriage equality, marriage law reform in New Zealand with, you know, having marriage between men and women being recognised in the same way as men and women. And entire rugby teams, which apparently is on the slippery slope.
Entire rugby team
Before
marrying.
Before you know it, you'll have whole rugby teams marrying themselves.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
So there's this...
It'll make changing teams harder.
There's this sports league in the States called... The NFL and a team called the Minnesota what?
Oh my god, you're stealing my story.
Is this on your list?
It's on my list.
But I just built a friggin'. All right, go. It's yours now.
Oh, no, it's nothing. I was
going to do it better than you.
Really? You probably were. Chap named. Can you pronounce his name though? The first guy.
Yes.
Brendan
Aaron Badejo.
Aaron Badejo. An NFL player.
Yeah.
Spoke out. About gay marriage,
yeah.
In support of it. I can't remember exactly what he said, and I haven't looked. But a legislator from... So he was in Baltimore, Maryland. He's in the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
A legislator from Maryland sent a letter to the Baltimore Ravens owner, Steve Biscotti, but I don't think it is. Maybe it is. Anyway, Steve Biscotti. Saying, as a delegate to the Maryland General Assembly and a Baltimore Ravens football fan, I find it inconceivable that one of your players... would publicly endorse same-sex marriage, specifically as a Raven football player, wrote Burns, who was a Democrat but also a Baptist pastor. So that's interesting. Yeah. I'm requesting that you take the necessary action as a national football franchise owner to inhibit such expression from your employee and that he be ordered to cease and desist such injurious actions, Burns wrote. In closing, he added, I know of no other NFL player who has done what Mr. Aaron Badejo is doing. So that was... a douchebaggy thing to do. Step in another NFL player named Chris Clue, who, interestingly enough, on Twitter, if you want to follow his Twitter handle, is Chris Warcraft. He is also a gamer.
Oh, this is that guy. I didn't know that there was an intersection of the stories.
Totally busting stereotypes he is. Yeah. He writes very eloquently. Uses big words and plays Warcraft as well as being a professional athlete.
A buff-haired jock.
Yeah. He writes to Burns, by using your position as an elected official when referring to your constituents so as implicitly to threaten the Ravens organization, to state that the Ravens should inhibit such expressions from your employees, you not only are you clearly violating the First Amendment, you also come across as, I can't remember because the one I'm reading right now has it censored because it's a bit rude.
A narcissistic Fremundistain.
Fremundistain.
Yeah.
Right, anyway. It goes on to write...
What on earth? I'll read it for you, Dylan, because you're not going to do it right. What on earth would possess you to be so mind-bogglingly stupid? It baffles me that a man such as yourself, a man who relies on that same First Amendment to pursue your own religious studies without fear of persecution from the state, could somehow justify stifling another person's right to speech. To call that hypocritical would be to do a disservice to the word.
30 minutes.
Mind-fucking obscenely hypocritical starts to approach it a little bit. That's him.
Yeah. And he goes on to say, I can assure you that gay people getting married will have zero effect on your life. They won't come into your house and steal your children. They won't magically turn you into a lustful cock smoker.
You got it wrong. It's not what? Lustful cock smoker.
Sorry, it is.
Oh, my God. Nah. Oh. This is why we don't have Shakespeare anymore. I have to. This is why.
Every time Shakespeare wrote cock monster, I'd say cock smoker. It was terrible.
You punk. Come on now.
They won't even overthrow the government in an orgy of hedonistic debauchery because all of a sudden they have the same legal rights as the other 90% of our population.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great letter.
I like it when people completely destroy your stereotypes. I like that because, I associate being a sports person with being a jock buffhead. If someone said that they were a league player, I would assume they, probably had quite thick thighs and also heads.
Yeah, I read this the first time without knowing anything about this guy, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of big words for a football player. And then I Googled him and was like, oh, look at that. He's on Twitter and he's called Chris Warcraft and he posts a lot about things like gaming forums and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh,
next story.
Speaking of gaming forums. So we've spoken a couple of times about how bad the experience is of being a legitimate paying customer, computer gamer. We've spoken about this a couple of times because DRM is so very unpleasant. Now, Steam has saved us from some of it, but there's still various, bullshitty things like having to sign into Microsoft social clubs and all that sort of stuff. It's like, I am paying and you make the experience bad for me. Once upon a time, back in the bad old days, I stole games. When I did that, when I was a teenager, the experience was nice. You'd install it and you'd play it. There was just no messing around. It was just a way you would go. But then, of course, I decided to become legitimate. And now, I get treated like shit, basically. The customers are treated like shit. You know, it's the old example we've all heard of, if you watch a movie on DVD or Blu-ray, you have to sit through startup things and sometimes trailers that you can't skip and FBI warnings and all of that stuff. And if you download a movie, you just get the movie. It just starts playing immediately and you can play it on whatever you want to play it on. Within reason. You can't probably play it on your microwave unless your microwave is a very special model. And I don't know why you'd want to, actually, watch movies on your microwave. But that's beside the point. I don't know why you even brought microwaves up, Dylan. But Ubisoft have been responsible for... Well, they make some pretty cool games. Old Ubisoft. I'm not going to give you any examples off the top of my head because I can't remember any. Probably
no,
because
I agree
there are
I do,
so
and I can't remember any
many.
Either. Oh, wait. Rainbow Six, isn't that one of these? The whole Rainbow Six trilogy of... Or whatever.
Yeah. And that possibly is the most recent example that I've had. And I've been affected by this very thing. So, well, here's the headline. Ubisoft drops its crappiest DRM. And the notorious... crappy DRM scheme that we're talking about here is requiring you to have a continuous internet connection in order to be able to play the game. And I think it's probably Ubisoft where I've had this problem. You are playing the game, and it's not a multiplayer game, it's a local game which you've bought on DVD from a shop, and you install it, and it's not downloading anything, and it's not doing anything with leaderboards, and if your internet connection goes down, the game stops. For no fucking reason. And if I was a pirate, the game, that would have been cut out of the thing for me. And I would just be able to continue playing. There would never be any delays. I wouldn't need to mess around with serial numbers. It would just continue. Anyway, they are finally listening to their customers and they've dropped that. Now, of course, they're not dropping all of their ineffectual DRM. If it was effective, there wouldn't be all these downloadable versions, which I'm sure are still out there. I'm not being all coy when I talk about being legit. I haven't downloaded a game in, except in Steam, in, probably 10 years. I've got a huge pile of DVD cases over there. I have given these fucking asshole thousands of dollars to treat me like shit. And I'm not a masochist. I do not want to be treated like shit. I just want to be legit. I want to make sure that these game studios continue to make really cool games for me. But they don't have to treat me like shit at the same time, surely. Anyway, so this was in an interview with Rock Paper Shotgun. And the interviewer, who I don't know who it was, said, would you be willing to admit that this DRM required an always-on internet connection to be in the background was a mistake? And, of course, the guy said, no, I wouldn't say that. This is just a process. We listen to feedback. It's not that it was a mistake. It's just, you know, we're continuing to develop our schemes by backing the fuck out of one, which has been incredibly unpopular.
Next story.
You can do one now while I recover.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just reading about what games they make. Assassin's Creed is probably the other really well-known. Far Cry is also there as well. Did you see the new HP computer? It's called the HP Spectre 1.
I think it's called the HP Apple SE 3.
Close.
Yeah. It looks so much like Apple hardware. The keyboard
I'm going to get to that in a second.
Yeah.
Two things. One is, it's a computer designed for Windows 8.
Yeah. And it doesn't have a touch screen. Brilliant. Brilliant.
And two, it maybe looks like a Mac, an iMac.
It looks so much like an iMac.
So here's the I get that it does, but when you look at the two compared, I mean, they're both a big screen and a kind of aluminium case, right? But beyond that point, they don't actually look that much alike.
Yeah.
I mean, the iMac has a big has you know, the iMac has stuff below the screen that isn't in the HP one. It's just the HP one's only a screen and a bezel. There's no lower aluminium bit.
Yeah.
The foot is a completely different shape and also a very different functionality. The foot on the iMac is literally just a foot. There's nothing, you know, it's a single solid piece of aluminium, I think. On the HP, it's actually looks like it's part of the computer because the HP is much thinner than an iMac, etc. I mean, yes, they're similar, but I don't know. I mean, look at them. Yeah, I don't know. I just, they're no more similar than, you know, two coupe cars from different manufacturers. They're no more similar than a Ford Falcon and a Holden Commodore, really. They have some similar elements.
It's clear that the consumers want their computers to look a certain way. And if you, unless you fucking nail it, you better not vary from that too much. And very few of the PC manufacturers, I would say, were particularly nailing being interesting and different. Microsoft, strangely enough, perhaps maybe the most successful with their skinny little things, their skinny little laptops. And we haven't actually seen those in real life yet, so they might suck as well. Honestly, I don't really see any problem with PC manufacturers and laptops, which have a very specific form factor. You can't really vary from that. You've got a keyboard and you've got a screen and they fold onto one another. Right? So from there, you know, there's only a few choices to make. You know, the size of it's going to be dictated by the size of the screen. Right?
I mean,
the keyboard is going to be dictated by that as well. You've got to have a touchpad on there unless you have a friggin' side saddle rollerball like we used to have back in the 90s, those ridiculous things. Unless you have a little IBM click commander in the middle of the keyboard. You know, there's only certain ways you can vary. You get to texture and you get to color. I don't really see a problem with, you know, a lot of PC laptops looking pretty much like a MacBook, because the MacBook is still the best laptop. Whatever the other guys make, the MacBook, it's the nicest designed one. I don't see the big deal. But making a desktop, an all-in-one desktop, where you've got a lot of other ways in which you can vary the way the thing looks, and a desktop keyboard and a trackpad. There's really no excuse there for making them look.
Looks a lot like an iMac one.
There is such variety in keyboards certainly. Trackpads are still a somewhat more niche device, but certainly in keyboards, there's such variety. I just don't see the excuse in making it look so much like an Apple one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it just seems like laziness to me.
It just doesn't seem as ridiculously similar. You know, it looks like a monitor because that's essentially what an all-in-one computer looks like. And monitors are, you know, it looks like I've got a monitor here on my desk that's like, I don't know, 8 years old now. It's 4x3.
Yeah.
And it has not dissimilar styling, really.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. They're similar, but they're not. I think they're just following on a similar design trend. I don't think they're and maybe Apple did set that trend, but
I think if anything, the actual desktop unit, the all-in-one unit itself, the stand's ugly, but the actual screen part I think actually looks better than the Apple one, because the Apple one has such a big bezel. It's got that big chin, that big aluminium chin, which I don't see any reason in having that there, and a really wide bezel. And I think that the HP, you know, maybe does slightly better than that. It doesn't have exactly a skinny bezel, but it doesn't have that big fucking chin. But the keyboard and trackpad, and the stand is ugly, but the keyboard and trackpad, why clone when you don't need to? Why clone when you don't fucking need to? Hire a good designer. There are lots of them out there. Get one of these people who's making the fake, you know, this is a leak of what the next iPhone's going to look like, or this is a leak of what the next MacBook's going to look like. Hire one of those guys, because those guys are really good.
I mean, certainly if it were a desktop that was designed and looked like the Mac Pro, then sure, because that's, you know, it's such a distinctive design. If it was a laptop that looked like that old weird toilet seat MacBook or iMac or whatever it was, no, iBook, then that'd be something as well. Or it looked like the old Jelly Bean iMac. All of those things.
Ugly. They're all ugly. They did not stand the test of time.
They were all ugly, and they were also all very unique. There's nothing that unique about black and brushed aluminium and, you know, the shape of a monitor. Yeah. Like, it's not that. Maybe the, and it, even looking at the trackpad, like, it just looks like a Wacom tablet without a pen.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, none of the stuff is, it's kind of iconic for Apple, but it's not that iconic, and it's not that different to everything else. It's not that different to the default, you know? The keyboard looks like a default keyboard except for the fact it's got those island-style keys and it's aluminium. I'd prefer a black one, actually. I hate the aluminium keyboard, but
yeah,
there you go. But the thing for me is I can understand why the hell you'd make a Windows 8. Well, apparently the reason you'd make a Windows 8 all-in-one computer that doesn't have multi-touch screen is because only one manufacturer has actually managed to pass Windows 8 multi-touch testing. And it's not HP, and it's not anyone who makes normal size screens.
Right. Well, that'll be a problem, won't it? I don't want to touch my monitor anyway.
No, but you...
Why would I want to do that?
You probably will once you've got Windows 8 on there. It wants you to touch it.
Fuck no. Humans just ooze grease out of their skin constantly, all day. And, you know, I'm not like a human in every respect, but that's one way in which my manufacturer really nailed it.
Next story.
Is it time to ban foie gras? Is it time? Is it time to ban foie gras? Dylan, what do you think?
I don't know enough about it.
Foie gras is made from duck livers.
Yep. Isn't it goose livers?
Not in France. It can be made with goose livers, but the real deal is made with duck liver.
Okay, carry on.
You can make foie gras with goose, and you can still call it foie gras, but that's not traditional. Now, here's the difficulty with foie gras. It is made by force-feeding the bird by sticking a tube down its throat and pumping really high-energy food in there, really fatty food in there, so that their liver gets huge and fatty. And I think it's not time to ban foie gras. And here's why. Because foie gras is just delicious. It is so good. It is one of the most divine foods on earth. But it might be time to ban the force feeding, because it is possible to make foie gras from ducks. Now this is something I saw it years ago, and all you have to do really is just provide them with a huge surplus of food, and they'll bloody well eat it. And their livers might not get quite as big as the force-fed ones, but you're also not unnecessarily terrorizing a bird for its entire life. And I think it's got something to do with, like, eating acorns or something like that. Anyway, so I think ban the force-feeding, because it's awful. We shouldn't treat animals that way. I don't think we have a right to treat animals that badly. And, you know, in the same way that I think that pigs, sows shouldn't be in crates, you know, cattle shouldn't be on concrete pads, they should be on grass and earth, and hens shouldn't be in cages, they should also be out in grass and bush, because that's where they want to be.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't stick a fucking tube down a duck's throat and force food into its stomach just to make its liver big. When it is apparently not necessary. It's probably more expensive to raise them, you know, in a more healthy, more humane way. But so what? Foie gras is not an inexpensive food substance. You know, you don't get it. Well, someone's probably going to say, you know, there's foie gras at KFC in Paris, for all I know.
Probably.
But you know, it would probably be dodgy, fucking fake foie gras. I would expect. You can probably get a foie gras pie at KFC Paris, actually. Who knows? Maybe that's what they get instead of the weird potato and gravy pie that we got. Anyway, I say it's not time to ban foie gras, but by all means, ban the force feeding. And we could lead the way on that.
Do we produce a lot? Apparently in France, if you don't do the force feeding, you can't call it foie gras. Like, I can't call it foie gras anyway because I can't pronounce it, but...
Right.
In France, that you can just call it fatty duck liver then.
Right. Right.
Probably in French.
Has it got one of those appellation... What is it called? Nom de whatever, where you can only call it a certain thing if it's from a certain place?
It has to be called a very specific thing and made in a very specific way to qualify for the title.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe in New Zealand we should get a bunch of friggin' ducks because, you know, we actually can grow them here just fine. I've seen them from time to time. And feed them the right way and make humane, friendly, organic foie gras. I bet someone would make a whole bunch of money out of doing that. A whole bunch. And on the plus side, you'd be able to also sell the bird for its delicious ducky flesh. Ooh-wee, give me a roasted duck and a bit of foie gras. Mmm. Yum, yum.
Next story.
Don't suppose you've got one.
A next story. Well, no, actually, I do. It's really important. I should have mentioned it earlier. You may need to change the PIN number on your credit card or EFTPOS card.
Because you stole it?
No, because a large list of them has been leaked on the internet.
Oh. So how will I know? Because there was a thing that was leaked and it was like, you can put your username and password in here and it'll tell you if you're in the leak. And I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, that's right. You just type your PIN number into this card. No, it's hilarious. It's been going around Twitter. It's just a list of, kind of points out the silliness of PIN numbers, but it's just a list of numbers from 0000 to
99999. Funny.
And oh my God, my PIN number's in there. You should check. I'm pretty sure yours will be too.
It might not be.
Really?
Six digits, motherfucker.
On what?
No, I'm telling you, I'm making it up.
I was going to say.
Of course my number's in there. I just don't want it to be. That's all.
No, it's in there.
So it's a fake.
Tell me what line it's on. Well, it's sort of a fake and it's sort of true. I mean, your PIN number is in there.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not associated with your card number. I don't know.
Oh, I meant to ask David another question about domain names, but never mind.
Oh, no.
Next story.
Another one about food, but this one's not about foie. This one is about Marmite. Marmageddon. No. Marmageddon set to spread into 2013. Yes, it's not my cleverness. No, it was 3 News that did that one.
I see that. Right there in the URL.
3 News, possibly Radio Live. Some good news and bad news for Marmite fans. Sanitarium is confident production of the yeast spread can begin again by the end of October, but General Manager Pierre Van Heerden says that doesn't mean it'll be back on the shelves straight away. Something, 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 yeasts, this and that and the other thing, and then
blah, blah,
the process
it's hard to make,
and then sometime
stuff.
Next year probably. I've got only a little bit left. And,
yeah, we're just scraping the bottom of our jar at the moment, and the only person in the house who really eats it is our 3-year-old, Joshua, who takes it to kindy, has Marmite sandwiches at kindy.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to soon test if he likes Vegemite, and if he doesn't like Vegemite, we'll have to go and... I have no idea what you have to do to get Marmite these days. I suspect it's some sort of prostitution thing. You go and stand on a street somewhere, lift your leg up, trade some favours for a jar of Marmite.
Yeah. Speaking of your offspring, I'm pretty sure that boy is going to murder you one day. Daughter sentenced after stealing father's retirement fund. Sometimes you have to blame the parents. A 66-year-old man.
This is why I don't keep a retirement fund.
For only this reason. A 66-year-old man cannot afford to retire and will have to work until he drops, which is probably a good idea and it might make him live longer, after his daughter stole $33,000 from his bank accounts. A court has been stolen. His 24-year-old daughter, whose name is Kirby, And that's, I mean, that's your first warning. And he presumably named her. He should have known what was coming. Showed no emotion in Gisborne District Court when she pleaded guilty to using a BNZ website and a Kiwi Bank website to obtain a pecuniary advantage. She was sentenced to 10 months home detention and ordered to pay reparation of $10,000, which is less than a third of what she stole, at $50 a week. And I doubt that's going to cover his groceries.
I don't understand. And something that's straightforward. You stole X amount of money. How could reparation? How could that you?
How could reparation be less than what, reparation stole?
Than what you took?
I think reparation should always start baseline at what you stole.
Like I understand,
especially
in the
when you're not paying, It's not like we're going to bankrupt
for something that's not so clearly, you know, subjective or objectively measurable in monetary sense. Sure, it's, you know, it's weird, but. If I steal $30,000 and I get caught, I expect the reparation to start at $30,000.
Yeah, and you know, maybe go up from there.
Yeah,
you know, depending on the nature of the theft.
$50 a week, did you say?
That's how much she's paying it back.
That's
at.
That's pretty steep. That's I don't know. Right. So $50 a week is $2,600 a year. So she's going to have it paid off in 4 years. That's
Judge David Ruth said that the woman controlled her father's bank accounts electronically. And while she was living with her father, she made 321 direct credit payments from his accounts to hers, involving sums ranging from $20 to $1,500. And she took $33,063 between August 2010 and March 2012.
And he didn't notice?
He only noticed when Gisborne District Council told him his rates were in arrears.
I guess it was accounts he wasn't actively watching or something.
Well, that's right. And it sounds like he didn't exactly have a lot of other accounts. So, I mean, oh my God, he raised her wrong. Something went wrong with this girl. You say that there's no such thing as evil, and I don't know that she is necessarily evil, just fucked up. But, I mean, when it's your own child doing it to you, I think you've got to take some of the blame. Because, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of people who can... No one can take responsibility 100% for what anyone else does. The only person who can take full responsibility for what they do is themselves. But of all people in the world who maybe should share some of it, it's the parents. So that guy should have done...
Well, he's only getting... Maybe that's why he's only getting a third of his money back.
Should have done a better job. Should have done a better job.
Next story.
New Kiwi.nz address, .kiwi.nz address launched. So it was released with a trial period.
Did you get discourse.kiwi.nz, did you?
No.
Someone else will snap it up.
Don't care. Don't care. I will do anyone if they pass themselves off. I will absolutely do them. I think that all these additional second-level domains, we've spoken about this before, are ridiculous. The reason this one... there was a trial period where they had to register 500 domains, and if they did that after like a month, I think, or 3 months,
I think
it would become a permanent thing. So it was basically you had to register your interest. But of course, the registrars know what side their bread is buttered on. So instead of saying, here is a fair price for this, are you interested? What they did was say, you can have it for a dollar, which is much less than it's going to cost. The registrars know that the more second-level domains they have, and this is one of the many reasons, one of the few reasons, actually, if I'm being honest, that we shouldn't have certainly so many and possibly any second-level domains. The registrars know that the more second-level domains they have, the more that people have to snap up. Microsoft have to get one of these. Possibly the police have to get one of these. There are a whole McDonald's probably have to get one of these. There are a whole lot of brands who have no interest, a whole lot of companies that have no interest in having a .kiwi.nz, but they have to get it because the risk of having someone else, a competitor or, you know, a disgruntled customer or ex-staff member of getting one and doing them harm by putting, you know, something inappropriate on it is so great that they have to get it. These are just a land grab for the registrars, and we should fucking stop creating new ones, and we should get rid of a bunch of the stupid ones we have. .kiwi.nz and .geek.nz, they've got to go. It's so stupid. We've got 500,000 domains, apparently. We've just gone past 500,000 domains registered in New Zealand. There is no real reason that they can't all be under .nz. It works all right for the government. Parliament.nz. It's not parliament.co.nz, is it? No, it's parliament.nz, and it's very obvious.
Kiwi.nz, and it goes to a First Domains parking page that claims to be the parking page for kiwi.nz.
Right.
But anyway.
I haven't tried McDonald's or Telecom yet.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they will actually have snapped these up already. It's probably been
that's interesting
beneath a lot of people's radars. But I think it's ridiculous. We've got to stop creating these stupid second levels. They're absolutely ridiculous. I don't understand why people want them.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
I really want a much longer domain name with lots of dots in it. That's what I want.
To exist. That's the thing that I found about... that's the thing that I think is an argument against it. Like, an argument for .co.nz and for .net.nz is we kind of understand those ones and we expect them to exist.
Yeah.
No one expects .kiwi.nz to exist. And if you try and tell someone your email address is morgan@discourse.kiwi.nz, they'll have no idea what the hell you're talking about and you'll have to explain it to them three times.
Kiwi.nz.com.
Yeah. Exactly. Even when I do my .com, people are like, MySpace. Oh, .nz? I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So you should, don't say choose A or B. Don't do that. Find your Urban Dictionary while I do a story.
Next story.
Shut up. We don't have much time. So, speaking of one of your boys murdering you to death, City Divided on Compo for David Bain. Now, this is all getting very awkward because now this independent, I think, Canadian ex-judge who has been going through all of the evidence from the trial and so on. Well, he hasn't released his report, so we don't know if he's finding on the balance of probabilities whether David Bain is innocent, at which point I would probably have to shut up, or on the balance of probabilities is not innocent, i.e. he murdered Robin Bain and the entire rest of his family. As I suspect, and as he was convicted of several times. but if that Canadian judge does find him on the balance of probabilities innocent, then there's a really good chance he's going to get millions and millions of dollars. Well, and if he's innocent...
By some estimates.
If he's... Well, he would deserve it. If he's innocent, he better get that. But he's not, is he? I mean, he's not.
I understand this, but I have a problem with it, though, in that... Maybe he is, maybe he's not. The problem is we have only so many ways to decide that, and the ways to decide that are in a court of law, and he's been through that twice. And
he was convicted a couple of times, yep.
Or was he convicted more than once? Anyway.
Well, he appealed, and they said, you did it.
And the last result is that he had his conviction overturned. He was acquitted. I'm not sure what the actual outcome was, but regardless, the end result is that he was
retried.
Not guilty.
Yeah, but not guilty isn't the same as innocent. It's a very important distinction. And that's a distinction that some countries do have.
I understand that.
You can be found innocent in some places, and he was not found innocent.
Yeah, it's not a distinction we have, though. So, you know, we have the presumption of innocence. He wasn't found guilty, therefore he is innocent. And
no.
Well, I'm not a lawyer. But the point is, you know, he's been through the court process, and that's all there is. And, you know, it is what it is. He won, and in that case, I don't know. I think the compensation is probably reasonable.
Not if he did it. Because there are different standards of proof. In the criminal trial,
it had to be beyond reasonable doubt.
And this is what the guy's balance of probabilities.
And that was what this report's been.
Anyway, we are just about to run out of time. So have you got...
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Yep, Lady Primer. LadyPrimer, Lady Primer, one word.
I can't even hear what you're saying.
Lady Primer, one word.
LadyPrimer. Lady Primer. That would be someone who, when you go out, everyone knows what this is, because we've all used this. It's essentially, it's like a wingman. This is someone who goes ahead of you in the bar to... either get the group ready for your arrival when you're going to turn up, and you're going to swoop in, and you're going to pick the juiciest, choicest example from the group of lovely women, and fly off with them. Essentially, Lady Primer.
Yeah. No. No.
Whoa. What?
Just make up. Just make up.
I think you're misusing the word.
You're all wrong.
You're all wrong! Me. That's me that's wrong. Just me. Max.
To be fair, that had 256 upvotes and 333 down, so maybe I was wrong.
Little babies enjoy their assholes. The next breath is faster and clench faster. All the efforts on the inhale. Not fun. The third breath is a step breath on the inhale, a double step. So it's like this. And you have two steps in your clench. Enjoy your asshole. Sure, you're completely relaxing on the exhale.
That's right. Exhale and relax your asshole. Hey, Dylan.
Hi.
Discourse coincid / VPN. Don't know how that's related. Tenuously at best.
You're listening to the weekly show.
Five.
Discourse. So it's great having another
Four.
Guest on this week.
Yeah, since the end of the
Three.
Show. All done.
Don't forget to rewind the tape. What's your
Two.
IGN talking about?
Haven't got one of them. It's been great having you. See Bye. You on the overflow or next week. Goodbye. Love you.
You're listening to the weekly show on
Whiskers. We're using that one.
Tune in right now for the extra large extended edition, available on discourse.co.nz or in your iTunes if you're already subscribed to the weekly show.